Hey everyone, and welcome back to Once Upon a Timing, your podcast all about Abby. I'm gonna take a step back here. I am an understanding woman. I'm a forgiving woman. There's some stupid things in this show, and we love it for it. But then every once in a while, something comes along that actually hurts. And this is the episode that hurts a lot.
It certainly was an episode. Yes, it was.
It quite was. I am Beth Elderkin. I'm joined as always by the lovely Abby. Abby, I would ask how you're doing, but we all know how you're doing. So apart from the how you're doing, how are you doing?
Apart from how I'm doing, amazing. I'm amazing. And us all go into, because I'm just gonna make sure I'm in the right headspace for this episode. Because you're right. There are things that we don't like, and there are things that we will nitpick. And then there is this episode, which, as I described to you earlier, was a fever dream, derogatory.
It's a bad, there's good bad fever dreams, there's bad fever dreams, and then there's this, which is somehow worse than all of it.
It just seems like an episode that's not right. It seems wrong, it seems like it shouldn't exist, and I'm confused and scared and alone in my house. Like, help me, I'm alone with this episode, make me stop.
Well, everybody, we are talking about season 6, episode 13, Ill Boding Patterns. And ill boding they are indeed, because the patterns are ill and they're boding, and we have to survive. And let me just give you the perfect example. So usually when, you know, of course, every time Abby and I record this podcast, we decide ahead of time who's going to take which part of the show, just to make sure that one of us, you know, that we're not talking too much, talking too little, and that we're sharing. We hadn't decided ahead of time. And then when we tried to decide, we had so much trouble. Well, this is what happened. I'm actually going to play it for you because we accidentally ended up recording the magic. So here you go. Abby, the question of the day. Do you want the Ogre Wars? Or do you want not the Ogre Wars?
Neither. Thank you. Paz. I don't care. Just tell me what I'm doing. Like, whatever you most want to do or least want to do.
Oh my, see, I don't want to do either one either. That's the
rock, paper,
thing.
Scissors. Rock, paper, scissors for the past.
Let's do it. Rock, paper. Okay, so whoever wins gets the past.
Yes.
Wins.
Whoever right. wins gets the past. Ready?
Rock paper, scissors, match. I win.
You win. You get the past.
Who did I really win, though?
Yeah, there's no winners in this game. There's no.
So yes, it falls unto me. Yay!
Yay!
Oh my god.
I would also like to point out that there's a certain sort of majesty in trying to play rock, paper, scissors over FaceTime.
Oh yes, it's gonna sound so bad. I haven't edited it yet, but I just know that it's just going to be a mess.
Just if you wanna picture it, for a little bit of levity, just picture it in your mind palace. Close your eyes with me. Just imagine two fully grown women staring off into the middle distance so that they're not looking at their screens and trying to guess what the other person is counting. it was entertaining. I will say I did a little bit, what I like doing is going to the Once Upon a Time subreddit, because mm-hmm. people were doing live watch parties or live watch threads during these seasons, and I like kind of seeing people unpack them as they were watching them. And this episode, when I searched for it specifically, is so universally hated
mm-hmm.
for the choices it made. Mostly for the homegrown characters, Balefire, but also it was just like, why did we bring Beowulf into this? And why did we do this to him? What did he do to anybody except be a hero for all time and a legendary story in which we all know and love or hate?
Well, I think it's actually a good, let's go ahead and start in the past, get it out of the way, get that conversation going and gone so that we can move on with our lives.
Yes.
Because, yes, we open on the Enchanted Forest. This is the time of the first Ogre Wars. And this is notably after Rumple had hit himself in the leg so that he could be injured and go home from the war. And his son is now big enough where he's already in Neverland, but we're going to ignore that because he's not in Neverland yet.
We're not going to talk about this.
No, we're not going to talk about where he's ended up, where he's gone, where he's going, because he's here. He's a full grown adult, but he's also a tiny little child, tiny little baby boy child. So there, the ogres are coming. Everybody's getting scared. All 14 of them, 15 maybe, because there's 5 archers. Don't forget that. And there's one guy who's getting ready to run. And that's a no, no, no. We all learned from Rumpelstiltskin. You do not run from the war, even though you're going to get your face trampled in about 3 seconds later.
The lesson in this is wild. Like, the micro lesson of don't run away, you shall too be a hero, for him to die almost instantly. Like,
in the most unheroic way possible. He got trampled by a CGI ogre.
That's like top 10 worst ways to go out.
I'd say bottom 10, but, you know, win some, lose some. Nobody's perfect.
Because this guy's like, I can't do it. I can't do it. Which I have to imagine. I know that there's this whole, like, narrative of cowards and leaving the battle line. But first of all, the mass chaos of what this scene was, he was not the only one, I don't think, running the other way. Like, this had to have been, like, especially if you see those ogres coming, there's no way there's at least one or two dudes constantly leaving. Because they are plucked from their homes, and they are made to fight. They are not put through boot camp. They are not hardened army soldiers. These are just guys who are out. Either they volunteered, or they were taken from their village. This has to just be, like, no, let him go. Like, I don't want him out there. He's going to cause more problems. But enter Beowulf.
Okay. Again, as said much earlier at the beginning of this taping, I am a forgiving woman. I am an understanding woman. I am willing to go all willy-nilly with the past, with the legend, with the stories of here gone by for. I do draw the line at Beowulf. I didn't know where the line was, but I have discovered the line. The line is Beowulf.
Which is such a... I understand where you're coming from, because I also had that feeling of just like, a bridge too far. It's a bridge too far.
It's like... And considering how... We had the Land of Untold Stories. They had opened up this portal, literal and figurative, to public domain stories. There's so many you can draw from that are ancient heroic tales, that are stories of, you know, they could have easily done like The Boy Who Cried Wolf in this situation. They could have done Little Boy Blue. Like, there's so much they could do. For some reason, they pulled in the 6th century story of Beowulf and Grendel, but Grendel doesn't exist. Beowulf is in medieval garb and is fighting in the Ogre Wars and hates Rumpelstiltskin. Like, say what you want to say. Nothing about Beowulf supports being in the Enchanted Forest with Rumpelstiltskin. Nothing supports this.
Again, my favorite Tumblr post of all time is the one where they were just like, Winnie the Pooh with a gun. Or I don't remember what it is, but it's like Winnie the Pooh with a gun. We have to get the magic spell book back, or Lightning McQueen isn't going to be able to fight in the next whatever. And it's just like, that's the mashup level that we're getting, where we are now like, I think there's a world in which we could have done Beowulf in this, and it would have been amazing. But ruining Beowulf? Now, I'm not going to say, like, I read this all the time, and I'm this classic, blah, 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 blah. But, like, I feel like maligning Beowulf as some sort of weirdo out to get Rumpelstiltskin and not really being, like, he kind of is a hero, but, like, not in a way that he's supposed to be is weird. Like, yeah, let's make Lil Bo Peep a mob boss, but maybe let's keep Beowulf as an actual hero and not just some guy that Rumpelstiltskin has to kill.
In a very floppy haircut. Now, the actor, he was very attractive. I thought, given the shitty material he was dealt, I think he did a fine job. His name is Torstein Bjorklund. He doesn't do a lot, but I will give him props. Like, he made do with what he had. And what he had was not much.
No, there was nothing about this that would have been any actor. You could have put anybody in this spot, and it would not have worked, because it's just, it could have been literally any. They only did Beowulf for the sword. And we could have done literally any sword. We could have done literally anyone else.
We could have done Sir Gawain and the Green Knight. If you wanted to kind of keep it in the medieval theme, that's going to be like a little bit more, a little earlier, but still in that realm. You could have done, I mean, but the fact that we have to give the sword a story, we don't need to give the sword a story. We just spent half a season about freaking Excalibur. We don't need to do this again.
No, this is not the show to have all the swords with stories and to also be ruining the stories of the swords. I don't know. Again, it's also Once Upon a Time. It doesn't have to have this much of a story. It doesn't even need to be a real sword. What sword is this? It's the sword of the good one. It's the sword that was used to fell many things. It's been found in different things. It's been called different names. It's this, that, and the other thing. But no, we picked a real sword. We maligned both.
Or it could just be like a sword that like some villain put all their good into or something.
Yeah.
You know, like with a parallel with the evil queen and Regina, splitting her two halves. Maybe somebody had put all their good into this sword so that they could brace being evil. Maybe that's something Rumpel had done. Maybe the sword goes back to actual Rumpelstiltskin. Alas, it is Beowulf. We are stuck with him, but only for this episode. So don't worry, guys.
Don't
he
worry.
Will die.
He dies.
He dies.
And it's fine. It's fine because it's not a weird retcon.
No
nonsense plot line at all, I promise.
To make Rumpel look better. No, not at all. It's
in
not
no way
thing.
Does it make him look better. Okay, we'll get there. I
Well, that's what it's designed to do. It doesn't mean it does it. But
I
that's
know,
what it's that's, designed to do.
I why do the writers think that we're all awful? Like, I feel like they are genuinely trying to make us like Rumpel and give him a genuine redemption arc. Like, if they were doing this and being like, look, he actually is a monster and doing all of the wrong things, I would buy this. Mm-hmm. But they're not. They are trying to be like, no, look, there's good in him. I'm like, you cannot convince me. You may have tricked Belle. You're not tricking this lady. Not me.
No. So Beowulf stops the young man from fleeing the battle and says, you see this sword? It was enchanted by someone to do something. It's called hunting. And I am going to look up this sword real quick. I'm going to pull it up. So this is the description. Hunting is a sword that belongs to Unferth, who at one point has a drunken dispute with Beowulf. Unferth decides to loan the sword to Beowulf later in the poem. It is described as rare and ancient, with an iron blade that was tempered in blood and adorned with ill-boding patterns. Yes, the sword that all the goodness and hero-ness is in that will turn you into a savior when you kill the savior. It all makes sense. It is all as it should be.
So, in what reality do we believe that Rumpel would have kept a hold of this sword for real? Like,
yeah, I don't think he, I don't, I mean, he would, I think it would have just been in his stuff. Like, I do think he would have just kind of kept it with all his shit.
I don't know. Like, this is kind of one of those things where, like, I don't know. Obviously, he's not too worried about bad vibes, but, like, this story, like, this thing ties you to a very specific story.
Yeah, I kind of wonder if it would have ended up in that giant, like, cavern of shit that he had that Emma and Hook got trapped in at some point.
Oh,
I feel like he would have just thrown it down there and it would have just, you know, been ding, blink, blink, and it would have been lost to history.
Yeah, but no, he, when she finds it, he's just like, oh, they found the sword, because it's just, like, out. Mm-hmm. Like, could you imagine, like, you did something absolutely unthinkable, and you hate to even think about it, and it's just, like, sitting out, just in your back room. You just see it every day. Hey, remember that time I was a monster? Yep, there it is. It's like, Rumple, what the...
Well, he heroically leads his 16 men into battle. I think my favorite part is when you see, like, five guys with flaming arrows, and then when you see the arrows in the sky, there's, like, 20. Like, yeah. Where the frick did the other arrows come from? And then you see the ogres. And I don't know how much the CGI budget was for. Whatever it was both too much and not enough.
Have we seen the ogres before? I genuinely don't remember.
We have, and they did not look like this.
Okay.
They looked a little bit stockier and shorter, and they didn't have the white Saruman hand on their chest.
They had such a, like, yeah, they had a very, like, Lord of the Rings Skyrim vibe.
I thought the same thing.
Oh, thank goodness.
Yeah, no, like, the Skyrim thing, nail on the head, because... The ogres wipe everybody out, and all that's left standing is Beowulf, and he's got his sword, and in comes the king ogre, I guess, and he had on that curved ram's head helmet, and the first thing that popped into my head was, Dovahkiin, Dovahkiin, Dovahkiin. Like, so you mentioning Skyrim makes me so happy, because it's literally all I could think about.
That's so funny. I was also, and this isn't a big point, but, like, I laugh because, like, you know, they're killing all the ogres and he turns the one into, like, a lava monster or something. I don't remember. But all I was thinking about was one of my favorite authors, her name is Jacqueline Carey. She writes so many wonderful books. One of the books she wrote when she was, like, early coming up was The Other Side of Lord of the Rings. And it was just like, hey, like, what if the ogres just, like, or the orcs and stuff. Like, the orcs are just, like, people, like... You know, there's another side to war, and it's just kind of the other side of the heroes. Like, it's not a one for one. Like, you're reading and you're like, this seems like Lord of the Rings. It is. I forget what it's called. I apologize, but, like, it made me think of that. I'm like, why are the ogres attacking? Did something happen? I'm starting to kind of empathize with the ogres. Maybe these people should all be wiped out. They seem like they've got a lot of problems. Like. Anyway, so I was just kind of trying to think of all of the ogre backstories. But then, yeah, no. But don't worry, Beth. Beowulf is not one of the 16 who dies. They all die, except for Beowulf, who then decides to 1v1.
He's 1v1. He's Super Smash Brothering it, and he gets his ass handed to him. And just as he's about to croak, oh no, the ogre lights on fire from the inside and explodes. And what, admittedly, a cool effect. Like... The ogre killing thing was the best thing about the ogre, which is a horrible thing to say. And in pops Rumpelstiltskin in all his, I'm spending a quarter of my normal time in the chair and you can't do anything about it, glory. Like, I want to give Robert Carlyle props for still doing it, but, like, the amount that he doesn't want to do it is so apparent.
Oh, for sure. And it's also just, timeline-wise, none of the way he is behaving makes any sense. And he's just like, I did it. I killed all the ogres. I win. I'm the hero of the town. Yay, everyone celebrate me. And I'll bring my 21-year-old son, who's supposed to be 9, to the bar with me. We did it. Yay.
I have the Wikipedia open to kind of follow along. And it says this sentence. He uses his dagger to genocide all of the ogres.
Okay, so that's worse.
and on another note, you can tell how much people don't like this episode, including the people who edit the Wikipedia page, because at no point is Beowulf highlighted to click on the story of Beowulf, which is in Wikipedia, or the sword, or Grendel. At no point can you click on any of that, except in, like, the actor guest appearance thing on, like, the right side. But that's not how Wikipedia works.
They're saying all of those things. That's not those things. Don't click to learn more, because that's not what it is. I don't want you to be confused. The Beowulf and the sword in the story are two different things.
Beowulf can't come to the phone right now. Why? Because he's dead.
Look what you made me do. Look what you made me do.
Oh, see. Oh, that's what Rumple turns to Balefire after it happens. And instead of saying, oh, no, Balefire, he just goes, ooh, look what you made me do. Look what you made me do.
I'm just imagining it's just like, uh-oh. And it turns around, blood on his hands. I guess I'm in my reputation era. Okay. So, okay.
Yeah. So Rumple is a hero, which apparently is something that he likes, and everybody's cool with him being around as the Dark One. And except Beowulf. Beowulf is pissed because in his mind, it's because Rumple is a monster. He's the beast. Meh. Funny how no one calls him a beast except when Belle's involved, which I think is just a bad writing decision. He's a monster unless he's with Belle, in which case they use the beast word so that we get the Beauty and the Beast angle. And Beowulf is mad. He's mad because he's jelly because he didn't get to do the thing himself.
You're siding with Rumple on this one.
I'm not siding with anybody. They're all awful.
I know. You're saying he's jelly. I don't think he's jelly. He makes some very compelling points.
Mm.
He is the Dark One. He isn't wrong. This man that's standing before them that killed all the ogres is the Dark One. It is dark magic, and it is terrible. Second of all of that magic comes with a price, and it is going to, there will be comeuppance, and he doesn't feel like he needs to pay for it because he didn't want this to happen. And he's trying to explain to the townspeople that they all just made a deal that they didn't sign up for. And this was not the way to win the ogre war. This was wrong. And you know what? He's right. This sucks. I mean, a lot of people would have died otherwise. I get that part. But there also just, unfortunately, is never comeuppance for the sheer amount of magic Rumple uses to destroy a race of creatures.
To genocide.
I just didn't want to say it.
It's not the best word.
Not the best word to use a lot. And so, yeah, I'm with Beowulf here. It's just this is wrong. It smells wrong. It's bad. I don't like it. And the whole thing is Rumple and Balefire just being like, no, it's great. We will show you how cool and great and cool and fun it is.
Well, that's Rumple's kind of doing that, and Balefire is doing the surrogate role of Belle of, no, I can help him. He can control it. He won't use it. And then lo and behold, like a day later, a bunch of villagers come to Rumple's house and is like, Rumple, please save us. There's a monster named Grendel, you know, from the Beowulf story. It's doing some evil things. We sent people out to stop it. We also sent Beowulf out to stop it. No one has come home. You must save the day. And Rumple, who had made a promise to Balefire that he would no longer use his dark magic.
I laughed so hard. He's like, don't worry, Balefire. I won't ever use my magic for bad or anything else ever again. And I was just like in my kitchen making dinner and I just loudly to myself. And he never broke his promise. Smash cut to the next scene.
We're going to have words to say about this, but I'm going to save them.
Okay.
Because there are words, but I'm going to wait until the words need to be said.
Okay.
Rumple does not want to go, but Balefire convinces him to go and says, you don't need to use your magic. We can just go out as two dudes and go save the day.
Yeah.
And we're both going to go. It's going to be fine.
We're going to go get our Boy Scout badges. Let's go, Dad. It'll be great. Let's go camp.
Yeah. Let's go. Oh, there's a lake? Rumple's like, I've got my dagger. Let's fly across a lake. And he says, no, let's walk across the lake or swim or do whatever. So they do that. And they end up at this cave where, quote unquote, Grendel is. But it's not. Beowulf apparently is Grendel. And that's how they
Grendel's
decide.
No, Grendel's just not here. Grendel is in Once Upon a Time in Wonderland.
Was Grendel in Once Upon a Time in Wonderland?
I think so. I was looking it up because I was like, where's Grendel? And it like showed me a picture of Grendel. Let's see. Once Upon a Time. Grendel. Just make sure I'm right. Grendel. Once Upon a Time. Here it is. Gender. Male. Status. Deceased. Cause of death. Stabbed in the chest by Jafar with his serpent staff. home, his house. Okay, I love the Once Upon a Time fan wiki page because then it follows with home, his house, relatives, wife. No, she doesn't have a name. Species, human. Hair, brown. Eye, brown. He's in Once Upon a Time in Wonderland. Oh, the Grendel, also known as the Handsome Man, is a character in ABC's Once Upon a Time in Wonderland. Based on a character of the same name from the Anglo-Saxon epic poem Beowulf. There's a link on this one. They must be happy about the portrayal in this one.
All right, well, Grendel can't come to the phone right now because she's in Once Upon a Time in Wonderland, and also she's dead. So it's all set up by Beowulf to draw out Rumpelstiltskin, which, just to pause for a moment, a lot of pieces had to fall into place in a very specific way for this to happen the way it did. Beowulf had to assume that Rumpelstiltskin was going to go. He also had to assume that Rumpelstiltskin was going to bring his son, because otherwise, if the son wasn't there, Beowulf would have had nothing to contend Rumpel with, to threaten him. Like, Beowulf is not just playing, like, five-sided chess, or like 3D chess or something. He's just on a whole other plane of existence.
This is where Rumpel got all of his his points. He was just like, you know what? I need to start living my life like this guy. This guy is amazing. He commits to a plan with like a 1% success rate, and then is excited when it happens. Like, I want to believe that Beowulf is the original, aha, you have fallen into my trap, and pretends that it's the thing that he wanted to happen. But in no way, he was just like, it'd be cool if he came. Oh shit, he came. And he brought his son? I'm going to monologue so hard. Like, I love this, and I would love the idea of Rumpel being like, now that that guy's dead, I'm taking all of that. This is my new personality.
I mean, is the show secretly genius? I mean, the answer is no, but we're going to pretend for a second. Because Beowulf is considered, like, one of the first, if not the first, epic stories in English, Anglo-Saxon literature.
Yeah.
And so it's inspired generations, thousands upon thousands of years of Western European literature. So maybe that's what they were going for here. Rumpelstiltskin represents the entirety of Western literature post Beowulf, and that's where we got the inspiration from. We figured it out, Abby. It's Beth, genius.
I love that you and I could write a thesis on what we think is happening in this show that definitely isn't.
What's happening is that I'm pretty sure around this time the Angelina Jolie Beowulf CGI movie was coming out, or had come out.
Oh my god, I forgot that movie existed.
I can't think about Beowulf without thinking of a very specific memory. Abby, do you want to travel in time with me?
Yes, Beth, I'm ready to come on a time journey.
I remember going to see that movie I went and stayed with my friend and her brother at his college dorm, where it was just like a bunch of gross guys sharing this big apartment together at university. And we all, like, they were like, oh, well, we'll bring mimosas into the movie theater. Their idea of mimosas was like the worst concoction of like beer, liquor, two-buck, like champagne and orange juice. It was like absolutely disgusting. And then not only that, we saw the 3D one, but the only seats we could find were at the side.
Oh god.
So you couldn't really see it. It was so, it's a very specific memory for me of a very specific time in my life.
To be fair, I get that so hard. Like, that is such a very specific everything you said after dorm was completely correct. There's no other story that could follow. We were going to go see a movie, so we met in the dorm, including but not limited to calling a drink something that it definitely isn't. And it's the worst thing any, like, the only, something only, like, someone between the ages of, like, 18 and 20 could think of. And then going from a dorm, getting the worst seats ever, and also it was during that time in which everything was 3D, whether you wanted it to or not.
Yep.
And specifically being Beowulf is such, like, that's so specific. I, like, that's amazing. I never saw the movie, so I don't have a fun story, because I just remember seeing the commercial and just going, I'm out. Because it's just, it'd be like if they did, if you tell me that this exists, I'm going to freak out. But it's like if you were, like, at the theater, and we were, like, we were going to sit down, we were going to watch a movie, and this epic ad for a movie came up, and it was some sort of, like, three-part series of Paradise Lost, and it's starring every cool young 20-year-old kid that's in Hollywood right now, and you're just like, what is this? That's what I feel like movies are, where they're just like, you know this from 11th grade literature. Now watch it be played by Tom Cruise and Zendaya, and I don't know why those were the first two names that came to my brain, but it has, like, there has to be, like, a really old dude that everyone recognizes top billing. So it's gonna be like a Tom Cruise, a Tom Hanks, let's see, like a George Clooney, like just like the R actors who are now like are like the old people now, and you're just like, no, our people. And then just a whole bunch of actors you've never heard of before in your life. Me and you specifically. Nah, not the children.
So just to correct, the Beowulf movie came out in 2007, and yep, this episode was 2017. So it wasn't recent, but it still existed. But it's like, it is essentially adult Polar Express. It's, you can't watch it now. It looks painful. It looks painful.
That's wild. I'm only thinking of that too, is because watch the Toy Story movies backwards. Not like backwards themselves, but like if you watch like Toy Story like 3 and then you go back and you watch Toy Story 1. And I remember when Toy Story 1 came out, it had that like Ocarina of Time feel to me, where I'm like, when it came out, you were just like, this is it. Mm-hmm. It's the future.
We've peaked.
This is Tron. Like, we have created reality in a video game, in a movie. We have peaked as a society. And now you go back and you watch and you're like, oh, this has a lot of corners where there's not supposed to be corners. Like,
yes, all the children have one face, and it's a terrifying one.
Where did all the shading go? And yeah, their lips don't actually move. They open like puppets.
Yep.
In Polar Express specifically. Yeah, I couldn't watch the movie. That movie creeped me out when it first came out, so I can only imagine what it seems like now.
Oh, yeah. It's camp. So, long story short, Beowulf has set this whole thing up because he hates Rumpelstiltskin so much. He wants to frame him for a mass murder. Because, you know, because he already did a mass killing of ogres. But if he does it of people, then it's bad news bears. And no one's going to like him no more. And so Rumpel had given Balefire the dagger, which he had brought with him, and was like, as long as you're holding it, I can't be tempted to use it. You're a good boy. You're not going to use it. And this is the part that I was alluding to earlier in the episode. Because, and I'm sure I'm reading too much into this, or maybe not enough, but the way this scene came across, it felt like they were blaming Balefire for Rumpel using dark powers. That he was trying to go clean, but Balefire stopped him. And it's all Balefire's fault.
Yeah.
And I hate that. And it really, like, it's not just a, that's stupid. That's gross. I hate it. It actually offends me. Because the character, the actor, and the show, and Rumpelstiltskin deserve better than that. Rumpelstiltskin is the epitome of a character who needs agency. He needs to make his own decisions so he can face the consequences for them. It's why the whole crux of the show is him creating this curse so he can get back to his son, who he had abandoned to embrace his dark powers. But now we're supposed to believe that that is the same son who ordered his father to kill a man, and then his father, to protect him, gave him memory erasing tea.
It's, you're correct. It is wildly offensive to the character, to all of the characters. Because we already saw in earlier seasons this Rumple getting the power, not being the Dark One at first, and falling in love with the power.
Mm-hmm.
Slowly, well, not even slowly. I'm pretty sure he snowballed pretty quickly. But it was his darkness, it was his weakness that pushed him to what he was doing. And now it seems like, hey, the innocent boy was actually a monster and not the good child you thought he was, who is now, it doesn't make any sense. And I don't like it. And you're right, it does, because I had that same feeling of just being like, is this supposed to seem like, is Rumple's fall to darkness now Bay's fault? Because of this? Because even before this cave scene, you can already see Balefire being like, no, we'll use this and it'll be fine. It's going to be good. Like, you can see the descent with him rationalizing stuff. And then Rumple being like, whoa, whoa, maybe we've gone too far. And it's like, no, that's not who this character was then. And it's definitely not. Putting it back in this now to give him a redemption arc is just baseless.
Yeah. And it really, when I watched it, like, it was a rare moment where I wanted to stop watching the episode, because I was like, nope, that's all I need to know. I know what they're trying to do. They only have a certain amount of episodes left before the actress who plays Belle is no longer going to be in the show. We gotta write things between them. So instead of doing the right thing and making the journey and sacrifice Rumple facing the consequences of his actions and getting to a very low point before rising up again, they're instead like, no, we still want him to have his powers. We still want him to be cool. We still want the makeup thing and the bad wig. So instead, we're going to all offload it onto a character that's dead.
Yeah.
Because he can't speak for himself. He's dead. Yeah. Can't come to the phone right now because he's dead.
He's dead. Look, okay, what he by made the way, him do. I'm just going to say it right now. The episode has to be Beowulf parentheses Taylor's version.
Oh yes, I was gonna call it Look What You Made Me Do, but we are doing that now. So is it called, what is it, Beowulf
parentheses Taylor's version?
Oh my god
so sorry, I'm good. Deep in it right now. I'm deep in the whole Taylor Swift thing, but this absolutely aligns with her new album, which is like, it's called like Dead Poet Society or something like that, but it is about poetry. This is about poetry. Beowulf. Let's go. So, I don't know. Do we want to get into this? Like, it's just Balefire's like, kill him, Dad. It'll be fine. I order you to kill him. And then he kills him. And then he gives him a memory potion.
He kills him by, like, slamming into him and breaking his neck. It's, like, this really weird effect. And the last thing I want to say about this before we do what we should do and bury it forever and pretend it never happened is, a forgetting potion is not going to erase the personality. If Beowulf Correct. Was so quick, sorry, if Balefire, that's why, like, the things
I know,
are similar.
I know.
If Balefire was so quick to go down this path, he would have done it again. And if he was so quick to go down this path, he would not have gotten a magic bean to, you know, get himself and his father away from magic. I know they try to kind of retcon it where it's like, oh, now Balefire thinks that Rumple killed these people. And now he's like, you're a monster and I hate it. They're trying to like retcon it and, you know, fit themselves into that little neat box.
Yeah.
But it doesn't work. It's they have, this episode did damage, and I don't know how else to put it.
It is so universally disliked, and I'm trying to find, I wanted to be able to quote the person, and I'm trying, there was, someone made a comment on Reddit, and it was so long ago, so I think it's fine that I can't find their username, but they made a comment, and my favorite was, they were like, every time post season four, when things get retconned that don't make any sense and actually do disservice to the timeline, this person's headcanon is, it's Isaac writing to punch up the story, and it sucks.
I mean, Isaac was never, like, a really good writer, so it kind of checks out.
I just love the idea of, like, Isaac somewhere being like, how am I going to, like, shoehorn Beowulf into this? I know. I'm going to do this. And then there was a memory potion. Yeah, though, and we might actually have to talk about it again because it's, like, the mirror of what's going on with Belle right now, like, in the present. And it's just so infuriating that we are supposed to be glad about the choices Rumple's making in this episode. I refuse to be so.
No, I refuse it too. And let's go ahead and get into that. We'll save the whole Hook does nothing and then does nothing, but is also engaged. We'll save that.
Okay,
the
so
end.
Just so we're still talking about Rumple, we'll finish out the Rumple stuff and then we'll talk about Regina the Evil Queen, dark, and then we'll close it out with the one sentence summarization of the Hook storyline. So.
Yes.
Belle and Rumple are like in the woods wandering around looking for Gideon's dead body. What do they think? Like, they're just out in the woods.
They're just looking around with the blue fairy who Rumple is. They have just decided that Rumple's key personality is that he fucking hates fairies. And this is just all he is now. He's just, anytime there's a fairy in the same vicinity as him, he's pissed.
Ugh, a fairy. Disgusting.
Side note, though. We were talking previously about missing Belle's hot librarian, sexy librarian outfits.
Yeah.
She's wearing one, and she looks incredible, but it's also the wrong place for her to wear it. She's wearing heels in the woods.
Listen, if Belle is never wearing the right outfit for the situation she's in...
No, she's so bad at it!
Which is really something I also relate to, because if we want to talk about going back to like 2007 and just doing a bunch of weird, wild stuff, like I was never dressed correctly in 2007, ever. Mm. I was wearing heels constantly, like everywhere. And I remember, and this is so specific, but my friend Katie and I, we would wear them like up and down to the bars. We would wear heels constantly because they made our legs look real long and we looked great. I loved it. And they were like thin heels, like they weren't like chunky heels that were meant for really hoofing it down a street. I found them years later, the heels were warped because of just walking back a little sloshed and not being able to post up quite correctly. But it was like I put some real miles on those heels, and I'm surprised my feet work. So
I mean, badge of honor right there, girl. I'm gonna props to you for that.
It was a commitment to a shoe that did not. And again, it was 2007. Everything was strappy, like there was no support. They were barely being held to your feet, and it was a nightmare.
This was the time of Sex and the City. We were all expected to wear very not functional things because we were all expected to be able to afford cabs.
Oh yeah, cabs everywhere. But don't worry about my heels because it's going to be fine. Even though you lived in New York. Could you imagine really walking around on the New York City streets with most of your whole foot out and on a platform of some sort?
I had heeled walking boots, and even that was borderline insufferable.
There's just so many greats. But yeah, so Belle is in like the wrong outfit, which to be fair, this is what we wanted, so I'm fine with it. They're out in the middle of the woods. I wish someone would have been like, what are you guys out here doing? We are looking for our almost adult son in a party city cloak. I don't know what they thought they would find him doing in the woods in the middle of the day. Like, he's out there, like, shadow boxing the savior, just like, come Emma ha, and just, we will go fisticuffs, listening to a Joe Rogan podcast, really ready to just like unleash some toxic masculinity. And then Blue comes up from the other side and she's like, he wasn't in the North Woods either. Okay. And I love this because Rumpel, and Gideon does it later too, where he's just like, remember when you lost me? Yeah, it was yesterday. They lost, Blue, Mother Superior lost this baby less than a week ago. And terror has been raining down on them ever since. Do you remember? Do I remember Tuesday? Sure do.
Yeah, that was a question for the audience, not a question for I know. Actual Blue. It's like, hey, do you, you know, because it may have been on the previously on, but we do want to remind you, this is the woman who lost the baby.
Oh, do you remember the book? The book that I was given when I was her handsome hero. I was named from this book because I want to be a hero. Mm. This book. Hello, it's a book.
Yeah.
So
we just did a lot of hand gestures.
There was a lot of stuff that was just for us. Just yeah. It was a lot of us forgetting we were talking to a podcast. So they're like, oh, well, we'll never find him. So then Rumpel goes out and immediately finds him. Because Gideon is still in his cloak, and he is just tromping around the deserted sheriff station. And my favorite, like, we're supposed to know that Gideon's kind of a dork because he, like, tries to open the door and it's locked, so he uses his magic power. And it's like, wouldn't he be just using that for every door? Just be like, I will just do this. Like, why check? Like, we don't need to check the door. We will just open it and get the things that we need. And so then he gets the handle, and then Rumpel's like, this isn't going to work. And he's like, yeah, it definitely will. And then he knocks his son out cold to take mm-hmm. him to, were they at the clock tower?
They went to like four different places.
Okay.
And at all of those places, they had the same conversation.
Yeah. A lot of the same conversation. We're only going to have it one time. But basically, Rumpel finally says, hey man, why do you think that killing the savior is going to do what you think it's going to do? And then Gideon's response. So he asks, why do you think that killing the savior is going to transfer power so that you can defeat the Black Fairy? That is a question I think we've all wanted to know. What is the logic? Gideon's answer. One time I was in the prison cell, and she saw that I had her handsome hero book with the guy that was named after me. And so she took the kid on the other cell and she tortured him, and I couldn't save him, but my door was open. So that's not an answer to the question that was asked, sir.
This head full, Madam Webb. My mother was with this guy researching spiders and she died.
That's exactly what I was. Why do you think this is going to happen? Once I was in a cell. Okay, what are we doing here? And so then he was
also,
just like,
I'm sorry. You don't just flippantly use child abuse.
Yes, correct.
In a storyline like this, in order to, like, there's things you can do to bring empathy to a character. I'm sorry. You don't just do child abuse right away. Like, that's, I did not care for that.
No.
Like, there should be, you should draw lines. This was a line they should have drawn, and I didn't like it.
Well, and the idea, though, with the Black Fairy is that it was just abusive. You don't need to, like, really paint the picture.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? We don't need to do a lot of this. This is fine. Like, you can kind of allude to it all you want, but, like, we're supposed to be having a good time. And again, this was Game of Thrones time, so they were trying to probably be about as dark and weird and edgy as they could. Not a great time in TV. People trying to chase those coattails was a nightmare.
And it worked out so well for Game of Thrones.
I know. I love that Game of Thrones got themselves, which is such a funny thing. I will never stop laughing about it. And Rumpel's like, no, Gideon's just like, I forbid you because I have the thing. I forbid you from getting in my way and whatever. And he's like, okay, that's fine, son. But also I'm going to give you a memory potion that we see him give it to Gideon first. Yeah. But then we see the storyline with Beowulf later. But he gives it to Gideon, and Gideon's like, haha, your memory potion won't work on me because I was raised by the Black Fairy. I don't know what that means.
It means nothing.
It means nothing. Okay, sure. So he gets away. And then Rumple infuriatingly is just like, well, I have decided. Oh, I'm sorry. We need to reforge the sword. I blacked this whole part out of my brain. We need to reforge the sword. But Gideon has forbade with the dagger, forbade Rumple from helping him at all or from getting in his way. I apologize.
No, here, the wording exactly is, Dark One, I forbid you from trying to stop me. And then two scenes later, when Gideon is with the Black Fairy, Rumple shows up and the first word Blue. Out of his mouth is, yeah, he's with Blue, sorry. The first word out of his mouth is, stop. I'm sorry. He told you, you are forbidden from trying to stop me. Going to somebody and telling them stop is literally the definition of trying to stop them.
Yeah. No, he fully breaks
semantics, it. Semantics, like people.
This isn't even like a fun semantics. Like this is just them fully writing it wrong and doing it wrong.
Yeah.
So we need the blood of the person who forged the sword in order to put the sword back together. You know how swords work. And obviously, who was the blacksmith that put together this mighty heroic sword, Beth?
Put together Beowulf's sword in the 6th century.
Who forged Beowulf's sword from the fires of Mount Doom and pounded it into precision and perfection with all of their blacksmithing power on an anvil for days using only the rarest of metals? Why, yes, Beth, it's who you think it would be. It's Blue. Blue the mighty blacksmith.
This was the funniest goddamn thing. Like, I almost can forgive this episode because of the stupidity of this moment. Like, this episode is written by Andrew Chambliss and Dana Horgan, who have written for the show before. Were they just not trying? Or were they just in such an effort to, like, F things up so badly? Like, maybe they were just trying to start a house fire. Like, the call is coming from inside the house.
I love the idea. They're like, you know what? We can say anything, and these suckers are going to eat it all up. And this is the episode where they went, oh, we found the upper boundary. We can't do this. So here's my question, Beth, before we carry on with the rest of the episode. When Blue was forging this mighty, mighty sword, do you think she used her
fairy
power?
The godmother made the Beowulf sword. I'm sorry. There's certain sentences that should not be allowed to be said.
Yeah.
Cinderella's fairy godmother forged Beowulf's sword.
I love this journey for her. Like, based on the fairy godmother, she will do quite a little. Does this, like, was she Beowulf's fairy godmother and forged the sword so he could go to the ball? Like,
Abby, we need to take another step back and visualize this. Imagine little Blue.
That's what I was about to ask.
In her little trumpet skirt thing.
Do we think she made herself big? Or do you think she forged the sword while tiny in her little jellyfish dress?
She was tiny in her jellyfish dress forging this magic hero sword for Beowulf. I was like, maybe I love this episode now.
This one thing. My favorite part is that, like, Rumple keeps talking through the whole episode that this sword is useless and worthless and terrible. And I love the idea that it actually isn't. He's just mad that Blue made it. And he's just like, no, she made a sword that sucks. And I'm going to prove it. Look, it fell apart because it sucks. So Rumple shows up and he was just like, well, I'm not going to let you do it because I won't let your heart be darkened. That train has left the station. We cannot put those cats back in that bag. It is not how it goes. And so he drains Blue of her magic. They reforge the sword. Gideon's out and running around. And then, like, Belle appears. And they have this, like, weird side-by-side conversation that is basically, yes, here is my entire plan. I'm going to let him get close enough to almost kill the Savior. Then I will stop him, which he's not allowed to do. And then he will be fine and safe and everything will be good again. And I, because I wanted to do this so he wouldn't have blood on his hands. And then Belle, ever the mob wife. My God, Rumpel, you got blood on your hands so our son could stay out of the system. Wow, I've never been more attracted to you. This is being a good person. Belle has lost it. Belle is gone. The Belle we knew is dead. She can't come to the phone right now.
This, I mean, I would say it hurts because it does, but I'm almost done being hurt.
I'm numb to it at this point. It's just, they've ruined Belle and Rumpel's character in this episode for the final time. Like, there's no resuscitating it. It's gone. We're done.
And the thing I want to point out before we move on from this god-awful plot line is, how do I word this? Intention is a big part of it. It's like how smell is a big part of your taste.
Yeah.
Like, Gideon's heart is already dark because he already has the intention of doing this. So I'm sorry, the actual act itself is not the dividing line. And we've already seen this because we've seen this with Snow. Her heart was dark even though she hadn't done anything because the intention was there. Because the darkness grew in her heart because she had those thoughts and those feelings and the instinct to do it. I also want to point out, unless I'm crazy, I'm pretty sure Gideon is in the Black Fairy's pocket this whole time.
Yeah.
So Rumpel's not doing jack shit.
No, this is actually, all of this is bad, and this is all just supposed to be, like, character building for him. But you are correct in the fact that, like, the intention stuff matters. This is where because we've talked about it before, but this is when they lose the whole hero-villain thing fully and completely. Like, they are not abiding by their own rules, because, again, like, if you're thinking this, like, the whole time, everyone is screaming at their television set at Rumpel, being like, no, you doing this does not make him good and you a better person. It doesn't make me like you more or him any better. Which makes the Balefire thing even more infuriating because the intent is there. That lives within him. And to take away that like moment of his weakness and his memory and take that out of his storyline, that would then propel him into being like an anti-magic angry person. It's stupid. This is all dumb and terrible, and I for the most part when we dunk on the show and stuff like that and everything, it's just because we're having a good time and a couple of ha-has. This was genuinely bad. This was bad top to bottom.
This was upsetting. It's the kind of episode that you want to forget exists.
I want
a memory tea. Where's my memory tea that will for make this me forget episode this? Let's move on from Rumpel and all his bullshit. And let's go ahead and talk about Zelina, Robin.
Oh my God.
And Regina, which I kind of loved this, but it's really bad. But like, I also really love the actor playing Robin because he's having a really good time.
I love bringing back characters. Like one of the examples I have is the show Scrubs. They thought that their show was ending, so they killed off a beloved nurse character, a character that had been there since day one, and they're like, this will be a very dramatic episode, it's like the last season, so like you're not gonna miss that much, you know, like it was very important, like big send-off. Then they got like two more seasons, so then they brought the actress back, but they were like, we're so sorry we killed you off, so they just brought her back as like a different, fully different character that only one character was like, doesn't she look exactly like the other person and no one else sees it. Like it was a funny little whatever. That's this version of this, because it's like, it looks like Robin. We call him Robin, but he's actually kind of a prick. And I love that for him. So he's out in the woods with a little box and he's like, I've got my little box and I'm having a great time. And then Regina just appears. I assume that this is part of the woods that, Rumpel, Belle, and Blue are not searching for the cloaked demon child of theirs. And he shoves the little box under a stump. And she's like, hey man, remember last episode? I was like super weird about the fact that you look like my dead boyfriend. I'm I'm kind of sorry about that. I'm reflecting back and realizing that that's everything that we've done here is probably was probably wrong. Like, we were all making rash choices, and I think we now are both in a place where we regret it. So how about like, you know, we go walk and talk a little bit, and Robin just goes, absolutely. How about I just sit with my thoughts for a little bit, and then I will come talk to you. She's like, absolutely. And she leaves. So Robin goes to Zelina and is like, hey, girl, let's get all the way out of this town. I have magic I stole from Regina. It's in this cool little box. We're going to use it at the town line, and we're going to get the hell out of Dodge. And she's like, absolutely. This is an amazing plan. Meet me at the town line. So we meet at the town line, and she brings the evil queen serpent. And she's like, hey, man, this is my friend. I love her. This is the good part of my sister. And she is coming to New York City with me so I can be a crazy snake lady. It's going to be amazing. I've got my
besties.
Baby.
Oh, Zelina in her Reputation era.
I see. It's all coming together.
It's all coming together. Yeah.
Guys, we are announcing Taylor's Reputation album is dropping. She asked us to do it. So she's got her baby, she's got her snake, and she's got one bag, which I assume is not enough for either of the baby or the snake. It's probably just specifically things for her. So
yeah, because I mean, that's what magic's for.
I love the idea that Zelina just packed a bunch of stuff for her and was just like, I packed no clothes for baby Robin. I packed nothing for this snake. I'm sure it can fend for itself. But I did bring some stuff to keep me busy on the plane. And so they're getting ready to use it. And then, like, Regina shows up. Is this when Regina shows up in some sort of, like, safari getup?
I loved this outfit because it made no sense. Like, she's, like, in this white, like, she's paralleled with Zelina. Zelina's in the black hat and the dark green outfit. And then Regina is in the white hat.
But it's not
very Westworld.
It's beige.
It's
She's
cream.
Got that Werner Herzog beige nonsense going on. But it's the cap with the flat brim. She's got it.
I love
pointed
it.
I do too.
Love for her.
I love the look when it was just on her, but when the three of them are standing there, she looks like she was coming from a different event of some sort. But what she really did was walked home and went, what are those assholes doing? Put on a different outfit and left, which very much tracks for her. And she's like, listen, I know my magic. You have my magic? Try it. I double dog dare you to use it. It's not going to work. Tries to use it. And she's like, listen, we were going to talk about this before, but since you forced my hand, listen, I know you don't belong here. I will do my best to get rid of this. And then, like, you guys can leave. I don't even care. Like, that's fine. So she and Zelina and the snake.
Oh, before we get to Zelina and the snake thing, can we pause for a second? Because I want to ask a question. I don't know if this was just me being weird.
Okay.
Because there was an element of this I did not like.
Okay.
For the most part, I do like it because I like the idea of bringing Robin back and not having him gel with Regina. Also, not doing some weird romance thing with Zelina. No, thank you. I hope that never happens. But instead, just being like I'm just like a weird, you know, I don't want kids. I don't want domestic life. I just want to steal shit and have fun. But you have the main crux of the episode is about Rumple and his sons and doing the right thing by them, even if it means you're not happy. And then Regina's doing the same thing with Robin. It was weird to me. And I kept getting this weird Regina is a mother vibe. Like, it was this weird maternal thing and I couldn't shake it. And I don't know if I was totally alone in that. But, like, the way she was talking with Robin felt like a mom talking to her teenage son who's getting ready for college in a town she doesn't want him to go to.
So I didn't get that vibe. I did not, admittedly. What I got was more of a person who is trying to utilize therapy talk too much. And discuss her feelings a little bit too much with a person who does not want to do it. Because we all know where Robin stands. Regina is just like monologuing at him. And he's like, yes, we have established this several times. Like, we got it. Like, it's the person that wants to debrief after a breakup, but like, it's all already out there. And you're just like, we don't need to keep doing this. We broke up 4 weeks ago. We've talked every single day. Like, this needs to be over. So I didn't get the motherly thing. I can see where it would come from, though. I could see what you're saying. Because she seemed like she was way more mature than the two knuckleheads that she was talking to.
Yeah.
So I get it. Because they were like little chaos twins. And then she was just like, listen, okay, no thank you.
Yeah, well, let's put away the pizza rolls. I'll make us a nice chicken piccata.
Yeah.
And make sure you get your veggies.
Yeah, you have to. Reasonable hour. Guys, I know you like your pizza rolls, and I know it says that there's vitamins in them, but they're really, it's all manufactured and processed. I need you guys to eat, like, one good meal, please. I watched you guys crush so many Funyuns and Mountain Dews today. Please let me get some healthy food in you. Please. Please.
So that storyline ends with Regina promising to help Robin get across the town line so that he can go live his life and have a great time.
And Regina does have like a little moment of clarity where she's looking at the snake and she was like, yes, her. And then she pauses and goes, me. Because she mm-hmm. is accepting that the other half of her is still her. And it's a real small moment and I liked it. And I didn't get enough time to sit with it because immediately the snake goes away and appears with Robin at the town line. And then the evil queen says a series of nonsense sentences mm-hmm. about why she has appeared there. Oh, yeah, some of the magic you used still stuck to me so I could use it. And that's why I'm here. Aren't we going to have a bunch of fun? And then you got like this weird like you felt the current between these two actors like happen again, but with two different versions of them. And I'm like, ooh, I'm into this. Oh no. I hope this doesn't awaken anything in me.
There's definitely the two evil versions of the characters getting together. You know what? I live for it. I'm here for it. I'm happy for them.
Yeah.
I don't like how Zelina apologizes to Regina, because in this circumstance, I don't really think she has much to apologize for.
No.
She's just like, I got this magic, I'm going to leave. Okay, bye. But I do like how Regina responds by saying, no, it's my fault. I'm sorry.
And I appreciate how Zelina responded with, you know what? I do like that answer better.
Yeah.
I accept. Because Zelina is many things, and a sassy queen is 100% the top of the list. Mm-hmm. So let's really dive into this really big epic storyline of Hook. So Hook is drinking his own liquor mm-hmm. at Granny's.
Yep.
Which is a side story of how Granny loses her liquor license. Because we always talk about like funny businesses that would be in Once Upon a Time. Wouldn't it be so funny as if there was somebody making sure that liquor licenses in different areas of Storybrooke. Like, it's this person's whole job to be, like, the food inspector. But, like, there's only two places to eat. So they are just the scourge of the one bar and Granny's.
Are you sure that it's not a situation where Granny has the bottle at the bar for him? Because I know that sometimes bars will do that for frequent customers.
Okay. Okay, I hear you. The bottle is just fully open that he is pouring himself, and it does not have a control pour on it. Both not good either. So all around, your liquor license is in jeopardy, Granny. Just top to bottom. I get what you're saying, though. So he's drinking that. Archie comes in, passive aggressive. Hey, man, a little early for rum. My man, he's a pirate. Get it together.
He's also an adult.
Also true. And then Hook says something problematic. Well, it seems easier than being alone with my thoughts. I don't remember what he says, but he was just like, I need courage to be able to do what I'm about to do. And Hopper goes, oh, yeah? You going to ask David? He's like, I already asked David. What did he say? He said yes. And he called me son. And then we went on an adventure. He's like, oh, yeah. Okay, well, what's happening? He's like, I have the deep. Props to Hopper. Because if someone sat across from me with what looks like a double shot of rum and just looked at me with dead eyes and went, I have the deepest, darkest secret. I could die with this secret and no one would know. It is a secret that only I know. It's the only piece of knowledge that is truly unique to my brain. And if I tell anybody this, it will simply blow up my life in ways that I cannot explain. and it is torturing me, and I am sitting in a pancake diner drinking at 10 a.m., and all I want to do is propose to my girlfriend, but I can't because of this terrible, awful snowflake of a secret that is living in my brain. And Archie goes, dude, that sucks. Like, he doesn't, like, I would just be like, what is it, man? You can tell me. Let it live in my brain. Like, I'll unload it for you because I'm a nosy. I'm nosy. No, Hopper's just like, well, I guess you're going to have to really find a way to grapple with that because you don't have any, I don't have any appointments till like 3 weeks from now, which sucks for you.
Well, yeah, because the conversation starts because Hopper shows up and Hook says that he tried to make an appointment, but there was nothing available. So he went to the liquor instead, which is not a substitute for therapy, just to make clear.
Again, a very problematic statement all by itself. I have to leave for therapy. Rum is here.
But I do appreciate, like, there are moments where Dr. Hopper is actually a decent therapist, to the point where I think some of the writers involved must have experience in therapy.
Yeah.
Because when Hook is talking about the secret, Hopper rightfully says, you know, you don't have to tell it. It's your truth. And, you know, just the fact that you want to tell does show that you are growing as a person, but do these things in your own time, which is a very mature way to think and not exactly something the show would do very often.
No, you're right. It was a very, very insightful. It did make me think a little bit because, like, oh, sorry, we invoked 2007. So now I'm thinking about the guy I dated in college. It had already kind of come up in this episode because the whole thing was that he had cheated on me. And then he told me because it was weighing on his brain. But it was one of those I never suspected. He could have died with it. We could have lived happily ever after and gotten married. And, like, had he not said anything, I'd have never been the wiser. I'm not saying that that's right, but I just know that it was just, like, the circumstances in which it happened. I never would have known. I never suspected. I never had any of those things. And I could have just lived my whole life never knowing. He told me to assuage his own brain. When people tell you things like that, a lot of the times it is to clear their own conscious, because now they are putting that on you. Yeah. And I started thinking about that because I remember having that argument of, like, being mad about it, being like, now you've told me and now you've crushed me. Like, that's the thing that will happen to Emma. Like, you're telling something that is going to blow up your life. Do you need to? Is there value in it? Is this secret? Because we talk about this a lot, talking about secrets, like David keeps secrets, Snow keeps secrets. But the chips that they're playing with are so much different than this secret that in no way affects anybody.
Yeah.
Like, Charming doesn't need to know who actually killed his dad. He knows his dad is dead. He knows that his dad did not die under tragic circumstances, and that has made him happy. The only thing that will happen with Hook saying anything is utter destruction. And it is his own guilt that is driving him right now because it is so fresh.
Mm-hmm.
And so maybe we should wait for 3 weeks for Hopper's thing to open, and then we kind of, because there's no time limit on this either. This happened a bajillion years ago. You do not have to tell him tomorrow.
He was arguably a different person.
Correct. Which, again, this is us rationalizing because we like Hook. But, because, I mean, we talk about this with, like, you know, oh, they did stuff bad in their past and they're unforgivable. But it's like, he didn't know. Like, you can't, like, okay, I did all these terrible things, but you are now somehow involved with someone from way back. I don't know. I think this is a nothing burger of a problem. It just introduces more lying to significant other drama for no reason.
So I'm going to do a little bit of a thought experiment that I think kind of gives us a little bit of context. So let's travel back all the way to the first episode of Once Upon a Time.
Okay.
Charming. Baby in his arm.
Got it.
Trying to get the baby Emma to the portal. Slaying guards left and right.
Yep.
So many stabby stabs. Now, let's take a step back and imagine one of those guards was Geppetto. Or one of those guards was Pinocchio's real father. Or one of those guards was Blue's boyfriend. Like, you could easily insert a connection in there that would make Charming's actions very reprehensible. Hook was a pirate.
He Hook found was a already guy. A villain. Hook was a villain when this started.
Yeah. And he was like, fuck this guy. I'm stealing the riches. I can't leave any evidence. We see characters do this kind of thing all the time. We see vampires doing this kind of thing. We see werewolves doing this kind of thing. Like, I agree that obviously what Hook did was a bad thing, and I understand why it's weighing on him. But I want us to kind of take a little bit of a bigger picture and be like, this is not an end-all be-all. And I do think Hopper is right in suggesting Hook give himself some time. But I don't think that's what Hook's going to do.
Oh, no.
It's going to come out.
For sure. It's going to be in the next, like, 5 minutes of the next episode. Yep. But I would also like to point out that much like the Balefire thing, I do dislike this twist. Like, for what it is doing. Like, I thought it was kind of funny at the end, like, oh my god! But, like, the way that it's being handled is such a strange, and it's not fun. Because now we're unpacking it in this, like, really weird therapy kind of way. And it's like, this isn't fun. This is no fun for anybody. Like, couldn't we just let them be happy for, like, a second? Please.
I would have liked this to happen and be resolved before Emma gets proposed to. Because having their proposal...
Oh, I'm sorry.
...sullied...
Their proposal was already sullied. I have a lot of words for what just happened.
Let's just go into it.
Yeah, so Hook goes home and he's just like, I'm upset and I'm so drunk my soon-to-be fiancé can smell it on me. Amazing. And he's like, listen, I have something to tell you. And then Emma... Guys, don't do this. This is not cute. This isn't fun. I was mad the whole time. She goes, oh my god. Oh my god, yes. I totally will marry you because I definitely found the ring. I have the ring out of the box in my pocket. I'm carrying it with me. I probably had it on before you walked in the door. Now I'm going to carry it down and make you propose to me right here on the spot. Whether you had something planned or not, I don't give a damn. I found it. I can't wait another second. Propose to me now. And then we get a nice little cute little proposal, but like, no. Like, no.
It's tinged with awkwardness. It's tinged with the far off stare Hook is giving of, I proposed to the woman, I killed her grandpa. And it's also tinged with it's not on Hook's terms. Like, this proposal is not just for Emma. It's also for Hook. It's for his story. I would argue their marriage is more about Hook's journey than it is hers.
Yeah.
Because he has come full circle from a villain to a hero in love with the savior. This is his story just as much as it is hers, if not a little bit more. We had a whole episode dedicated to him asking for the father's blessing. Let's give him a little bit of autonomy here.
I just also disliked this characterization of Emma being like... I don't know what you would classify this type of person as being, but she was like, oh my god, here you go, you can propose to me. Oh my god, are you mad at me? I'm so sorry I ruined the surprise. I'm like, I hate this. I don't know who this woman is, but it is not Emma. Like, this is, I see a version of the storyline where they're like talking and she's cleaning something and she finds it. But the fact that she's already downstairs when he comes home, it is out of the box. And she just immediately starts questioning him about it. I hate this. Like, you've ruined your own thing. Like, there, you can find it and then put it back and then be prepared for it. But, like, they went out and bought this ring. They did a thing. They had a journey. Like, let them have their thing.
Yeah.
Like, or propose all by yourself. Propose all by yourself. Don't just be like, oh my god, do it now in the living room. I don't care what you had planned. Even if the taxi's waiting out front to take us to the whole Jolly Roger being decorated and thrown, like, I don't care. Whatever. I don't know. This is, of all of the things to quibble about in this episode, this is probably the smallest, but it was just, I don't know. It gave me the ick, as the children say.
Yes. Like, here's the perfect little encapsulation. What if he had changed his mind?
Oh my god, could you imagine?
Like, what if he had bought the ring and then, for multiple reasons, including I murdered your grandfather, he decided to wait until the time was right. Wait no more he can, because she's just made the decision for him.
Two things. One, Yeah, there are two scenarios. One, this just a ring he has, and she's only discovered it because they've moved in together, and it's just something that he keeps near him because it's like his great-grandmother's amazing ring that he keeps on him at all times, and she mistakes for an engagement ring. Or two, like you said, if he has changed his mind, the conversation of that would be like, here, propose to me right now. No, I don't want it anymore. Like... Could you imagine? Like, I told someone to propose and they told me no. I've never been more embarrassed. Like, I asked you to marry me, you said no. There's that awkwardness. But then there's the prequel to that problem is so, that's hurtful. That hurtful, like, and would make me heart.
I don't ask for a lot from this show. It's our second time around.
Not anymore. We don't ask
anything
anymore.
I'm not demanding. I'm not a demanding woman. But I have, like, just tiny requests. They're very small. And one of them is, give me the goddamn fairy tale romance.
Yeah.
With our main character finding the love of her life. Just give me that.
But, like, and this is a post-Friends television show where there is a way to do a reverse proposal in a way that works. I will tell you that Monica proposing to Chandler after she finds out, and there's a whole episode about him going back and forth about stuff, that whole scene with the candles and everything and them having that moment, sobbing every time.
Yes, 100%. I can't even really watch Friends anymore. If that scene comes on, I'm glued to the TV.
Oh my God. I can't with that scene. Like, that scene ruined
There's
love.
There's a reason
for me.
Girls don't do this.
That ruined
very
my
archaic,
life.
Very archaic, but also.
But to be fair,
beautiful moment.
Archaic, but also in line with, like, her character specifically.
Her character,
like,
yes.
Yeah. Which is one of my favorite. Like, I think it's supposed to be a joke. This is such a weird deep cut, but it brought into my brain. The movie Bride Wars with, like, Kate Hudson and Anne Hathaway, where they're, like, two friends who get married and then they fight over a venue and then they're enemies for a while, but then they're friends at the end. There's some point where she's talking to her soon-to-be fiancé, and she's talking about dresses, and he's like, what are you talking about? And she's like, I'm talking about, like, Dior or something like that. And she goes, what do boys learn in school? I say that to my husband once a week. About everything. What do boys learn in school? Don't you know about this stuff? Anyway, we're off the topic. But anyway, that's the end of the episode. And anyway, I do think it's funny that casual listeners of the show should be able to tell, like, when an episode comes up and you're like, oh man, Abby and Beth uploaded a new episode. I wonder if they loved or hated the episode. Look at the timestamp. How long is the episode? Is it more than an hour and 15 minutes? We are so angry. We have so many words.
This might be... I don't even know what my least favorite episode of the series would be. This is definitely in the top five, if not the top three. This is an episode that isn't just... It's not boring, because a lot of stuff happens in it. But it's infuriating, and it... undoes so much goodwill that the show has. And at this point in the series, where we are past the halfway point for the final season before our soft reboot, this is a really bad time to have an episode that degrades the characters like this.
Yeah.
Including a dead one.
Including a dead one. A long dead one. This isn't like he just died and then we're maligning him. But, like, this was also, like, such a weird era of time that I want to just do, like, flat. Like, I would love to do, like, an entire dissertation on, like, this 10 years of media in which shows could not end correctly.
Mm-hmm.
There are so few shows. I guess it's probably a long-standing problem, but there's so many shows that just cannot end correctly. And it's always just, like, I actually saw a post about it. Honestly, I think it was today. It's hard to remember, but, like... It was talking about, like, what show did you really like that really fell apart? And I've seen a thread like this a couple of times. I'm not kidding you. Once Upon a Time is top 10, like, in the comments. Like, people will mention the regular stuff. Heroes, Lost, which is funny and for another reason. But just, like, but Once Upon a Time. And I went through and I read through all the comments. And I was just sort of, it was interesting to see because you see the normal stuff where people like, yeah, once Frozen came in. Yeah, once Frozen came in. Like, there was a lot of attrition from the Frozen storyline. And then just as they went, it was just like they were kicking the fans who stayed. Mm-hmm. Like, it was like, oh, you're stayed? Well, we will now be punishing you. And this was one of those things. But it's interesting to see that it has come up as a piece of media that, I mean, there was a whole conversation about how the thing that worked, you and I talk about it, that should have just been a one season miniseries.
Mm-hmm.
And it should have like been a bottle, like be like, hey, this is one season. Here's what it is. People would be clamoring for more. But then the correct answer is there's no way to do this without spinning it off into something where Beowulf is bad and needs to be murdered by a child. Like, for Rumpelstiltskin's character arc. I'm sorry.
Yes, can you so run he that can back feel, for me so again? He can feel better.
Yeah. Rumpelstiltskin murders Beowulf. The guy with the spindle from the store? Okay. Why? Oh, because he's trying to marry Belle from Beauty and the Beast.
Yeah. It all makes sense in context.
Does it? Does it? So anyway, let's forget this episode ever happened, okay?
Yes, let's take a memory tea. Let's drink some memory tea ourselves. I'm personally going to go for a nice barley tea, which is favorite evening time tea from Japan. I love it. Highly recommend it because it's caffeine free and it's really yummy. And it comes with a nice aftertaste of, I forget this episode ever existed.
Okay. Well, so I can't do barley. Highly allergic. So, not allergic. Oh, but I can't. Yes, of course. I won't do that because then I will cause more problems than I have currently. But what I will say, I will see what kind. I don't want to do a tea. I feel like a memory potion shouldn't be a hot drink. Mm. I feel like I would want like a cold.
Well, you like can do an iced barley tea, and it is very good. But also, I don't want to kill you.
Yeah, no, iced barley as well. Like, I don't know, just like a nice, like a, you know what? Just like an unsweetened sun tea memory potion. Just like on a hot day. Like, could you, like, oh my God, I can't wait for summer. I'm imagining the old style, like, glass pitcher with the condensation and, like, for no reason, a couple of lemons in it. The perfect memory potion. Just sit in the sun. What was I mad about? I don't remember. But this iced tea sure is good.
Well, everyone, we want to thank you for joining us and sticking with us for this extra special, extra long, extra infuriating episode of Once Upon a Timing. You can subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get those podcasts. You can join the Facebook group. That's at facebook.com/group/OUA Timing. You can also support us on Patreon and join our wonderful Patreon family. That's at patreon.com/OUA Timing. We want to thank all our patrons for your continued love and support. Helps us keep going and keep doing what we're doing. This week's Patreon shout out goes to Sharon Horwitt. Thank you so much, Sharon. And we're going to be back next week, Abby. And that'll be a season 6, episode 14, page 23. Now, I don't remember anything about that. But I will say, Abby, we are gearing up toward some fun stuff. I don't remember when the wedding episode happens, but it's going to happen. And I'm going to be so happy when it happens.
Beth, we have been making nothing but nonstop Taylor Swift jokes and references. It's the 13th episode. That's it's Taylor's number.
It's Taylor's number.
I swear to you, none of this was planned. It just all I was realizing that as you were talking. You were like, episode 14. I'm like, oh, this is episode 13. Taylor's number. Yep. I wouldn't have known any of this if my sister hadn't forced me to go to the Eras Tour. I've become a monster.
We watched the Eras Tour movie over Christmas, and Henry loved it.
I'm like, telling you.
He was dancing. He had his little microphone. He was singing. He was into it.
One of my very good friends, her daughter loves the Eras Tour, but she has to fast forward through all the spots where she doesn't clearly have a dress of some sort on because her daughter, who is roughly Henry's age, just so angry she's not wearing pants. So angry.
Really?
And will not stand by the one-legged reputation out spandex suit either. Which is very ironic because her daughter tends to not be a pants fan herself. but she will project it onto Taylor Swift and be like, no pants, I don't want to see it.
Well, everybody, a final note before we wrap up today. We are getting closer and closer to the end of season six. This is the big episodes, big season before we get into season seven. And let us know, especially our patrons in the comments, for Song in Your Heart, which is going to be the big musical episode. It's coming up in probably about 2 months. If you're interested in a video version of that, let us yes. know. Because we can make it happen. Well, Abby's already said yes, so I think
we're gonna do it. Yes. I'm skewing the votes. Everyone go vote yes. I will get my I will try to look better than what I got going on right now.
Well, yeah, I'll put on makeup.
We'll put on some Abby. Makeup. I might have my hair down. I will definitely not be in this 1998 Pier 1 Pompazon chair with a squishmallow behind me and random pillows.
So Gen Z.
Oh, no, my son helped me pick this out.
Gen Alpha. Great.
It's a corn.
Well, just going to put that little nugget in your minds for later. Video may be on the way as we wrap up this season of Once Upon a Timing and gear up for our soft reboot in season seven before figuring out what is next. But in the meantime, thank you so much for joining us. And Abby, we will see you next week.
See you next week.